Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a great show for you today where I will discuss the high-intensity trap and how to avoid that. I'm going to break this podcast probably into two parts, mainly because if it was a single part, it would end up being a very, very long podcast, and I want to try and avoid that. I want to try and keep everything under about an hour if possible. So we'll get to that, but first I want to go through a couple of quick housekeeping tips. I'm going to make it real fast. For those of you who are trying to get a hold of me, CoachRobDC@gmail.com. My lead time on answering emails in the last couple of weeks has been anywhere between 2 and 3 days. It's been a hectic few weeks, both in the office and from the Tailwind Coaching and from the coaching standpoint. People are starting to get into the meat of their bat and kill plans. We're seeing great gains out of people in those plans, anywhere between 10 and 15% increase in functional threshold with those plans right now. So those of you who are doing that, good job. You're kicking ass. Keep at it. We're going to really show what you guys can do come come April. Speaking of which, bat and kill is about 70 days away at this point. You have a little over 2 months. At the two-month mark, I'm probably going to discount that bat and kill plan by maybe 25%. So if you're looking for a little bit of extra help or a little variety at that point, keep an eye out for that. I'll have a coupon code up probably both on Twitter, on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, and on the website tailwind-coaching.com. Now, speaking of all those, go ahead and visit me at tailwind-coaching.com. If you need other ways to get a hold of me, you can find those in that right-hand upper corner panel on the website. You can find me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can find me on Twitter at CoachRobDC. You can find me on Vimeo. You can find me on Stitcher, on Podbean, and on iTunes. Now, those of you who are listening and liking what you're hearing, do me a favor, go on over to iTunes, rate the podcast for 5 stars. That'll help me reach even more people. The more people that I am able to reach, the more people are able to get this information. I love to help people out. I do this to no monetary gain for myself, with the exception of the sponsors that some of you are so graciously supporting. That helps to pay for hosting fees, bandwidth fees, things like that, so that the Tailwind Coaching Podcast remains free. I do not charge anything for this. I only charge for training plans, things like that. And I do just enjoy doing podcasts and getting this information out there and helping people to be better, faster, stronger cyclists. All right. Those sponsors that I mentioned a moment ago, Road ID, keep yourself safe with Road ID. Always a good idea to keep information with you on your rides, some way of identifying yourself if you're not going to carry a driver's license or a insurance card or something like that. At least go over to roadid.com, throw on a Road ID on your wrist, on your shoe, or the dog tags around your neck so that if, God forbid, something does happen, emergency personnel and paramedics and whoever can get a hold of your family and they can let them know what's going on, what's happening, and that you are okay or that you really are in need of help. All right. Second sponsor here of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, Competitive Cyclist. I've said it again and again. I shop locally wherever possible. I love to shop locally. However, if for some reason, I do not shop locally. There's one place that I typically go very first before I look at anything else, and that is Competitive Cyclist. They are a bunch of great guys. They really know their stuff, and they stock a premium line of all kinds of excellent road and mountain bike equipment, clothing, and various gear. Return policy is second to none. Customer service is fantastic. So go ahead and support those guys if you're looking for parts, clothing, or equipment. Remember, if you want to support those sponsors and support the Tailwind Coaching podcast through those sponsors, go on over to the website, tailwind-coaching.com. In the upper right-hand corner, there is a box that says support our sponsors. Click through those links and make your purchases then. And that helps to pay for the hosting, the bandwidth, and everything else that is required to really get this to get this rolling. Paint training plans that are available. I'm still working on my Criterium plan. That is coming along relatively well. Should be released soon, actually. I'm targeting releasing that thing in about maybe a month to a month and a half. That's probably going to be a four-week plan, and that'll be on the tail end of any of my modular plans, which any of these, of course, you can find in my Tailwind Coaching online store. The modular plans are great. You can build and modify your training system as you need it, and you can choose from any of my specialty plans, from climbing to the new Criterium plan, which will be coming out, and various other modules which I have in the works. I just mentioned Battenkill, Tour of the Battenkill in about 70 days. I'll probably be discounting that plan very shortly, so keep watch for that. As always, those of you who are looking for a little bit more bang for your buck, you can use the podcast10 discount code on my online store. That'll take 10% off any of your purchases, any of my high-intensity trainer workouts, any of my training plans, any of my modular plans, etc., etc. All right. My training update has been more of the same. A lot of base, a lot of sweet spot work, a lot of work on the rollers, a lot of work on the trainer, and of course, a lot of kettlebells, working on explosive speed, power, and endurance. So that's pretty much where I'm at. Send me an email, CoachRobDC, drop a link on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or hit me on Twitter, let me know where you're at, and what you're looking for from the season, and maybe I'll be able to help you out. We can get a consult together if we need to, and make you a better cyclist for the coming season. All right? So now, 7 minutes and 50 seconds. It's shorter than usual, folks. I'm trying to get it down there. All right, let's get into the high-intensity trap. First part of this podcast, actually the first part of this series of podcasts, is going to be more discussion of the physiological aspects of high-intensity training. It's going to be a little bit more informative versus a little bit more real-world experience. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about the physiology of high-intensity training and how to avoid burning yourself up and falling into that high-intensity trap right after this. All right, let's get into discussing the high-intensity trap. Now, high-intensity work during an early season part of a campaign or during an early season training plan is not necessarily a bad thing. at this point in the season, bear in mind that this podcast being recorded near the end of January in the northeast of the United States, at this point in the season, it's cold, it's snowy. You're either in base mode, all right, which most of us are, except for those of you who are doing your those of you who are doing things like Tour of the Battenkill and things like that, you guys are going to be very, very soon finding yourself in that build phase. So this early in the season, you're either in base mode or you're panicking because your goals are coming up soon. And, well, you've kind of just hung around, sat around, and not put in the work that you really should have, and your fitness is way behind where it should be. All right. That kind of issue, that kind of panic, is what causes many people to decide to do the, quote, race myself into shape, end quote, kind of training plan. All right. As the name sort of implies, the race myself into shape relies on extremely hard, very, very hard, short duration type efforts in order to build fitness. And typically the intensity is well above where you would be at this time of year, were you following a traditional or more traditional training plan. And the frequency of those high intensity efforts is significantly higher than it should be for this time of year. There is little recovery in between actual efforts, which gives you more quality training with less quantity of training. Now, this is, bear in mind, this is what the average person is thinking as they're following that. I'm gonna race myself into racing fitness, and I can just hit the races early on and go for it. Okay. Think with this high intensity type plan, you're going to be doing a lot of zone 5 through zone 7 kind of work, trying to get the most bang for your buck, so to speak. The big problem with this, and we'll touch on this a lot more in depth later on, is that most of this high intensity work should be accompanied by high intensity recovery. That means if you're going to ride hard, you need to recover harder. To steal a page from the bicycling magazine, book of silly catchphrases. In most cases, people who are doing the race myself into shape training plan really, really fail in this recover at high intensity kind of concept. Okay. The big question is, why do people try to follow this effort? Well, research has shown many, many times that high intensity, short duration work is really just as effective as long duration, low intensity work in terms of building fitness and in terms of building physiological changes in the body which promote improved performance. A couple of studies that have hit that and hit this relatively recently. I'm going to butcher the names, but Talanian et al. In the Journal of Applied Physiology, basically the take-home of this study was that 2 weeks of high-intensity interval training improved the same physiological markers of fitness that low-intensity training improved. Little et al. In the Journal of Physiology, actually this was from 2009, this wasn't even recently, commented that, quote, a practical model of low-volume, high-intensity training is a potent stimulus for increasing skeletal muscle, mitochondrial capacity, and improving exercise performance, end quote. So what does all that mean? Well, we're going to get into this again a little bit later, and this is just the overview portion, but basically that the high-intensity efforts that you are putting out during a, quote, race myself into shape kind of training plan really do work. They improve many of the same markers that a low-intensity, long-duration plan improves. But, here's the big but, and this is what I've seen not only in a lab, but also from a practical standpoint as well. Those people who undertake a high-intensity plan like this very often will get stuck on the notion that more is better. All right. These people tend to be very time pressed. Their goals are coming up very quickly. They need a lot of fitness in a short amount of time. So these time crunch kind of people tend to avoid that long, slow distance or that low intensity training concept because they cannot put in enough time to get the benefit out of it. Okay. Think of the guy who works 60 hours a week. Maybe a blue collar guy works 60 hours a week. His job is actually very physical in itself. Perhaps he's a construction worker or something of that nature. All right, this guy is a prime candidate for falling into the high-intensity trap. And the main reason why is there is a such thing as too much high-intensity work. All right, so with our overview in place, let's keep in mind a few things. Physiologically, how does the body respond to high-intensity interval training versus low-intensity interval training. Well, there are a number of things that happen during training, both high and low intensity, which lead to an increase in physiological or physical fitness, okay? Low intensity training, we're talking somewhere below zone 4. I'm going to use lactate threshold pretty much as the cutoff for low intensity versus high intensity. Although, keep in mind that 2x20 threshold efforts, while they may be sort of the cutoff between low and high intensity, they hurt. Okay? Even 2x20 at sweet spot hurts. All right? These are not really low intensity efforts per se, but they really are considered low intensity from a standpoint of what happens to the body. Okay? So if we're going to talk about low intensity training first, what benefits, what physiological changes do we see out of low intensity training? Well, primarily, we see a significant increase actually, in increased storage of glycogen in muscle tissue. Glycogen is simply a long chain carbohydrate, basically a very advanced sugar, which your body breaks down into glucose to fuel muscular contraction. All right, in both an anaerobic and aerobic state, by the way. You can use, there's a little bit of a myth out there, and I've seen it a couple of times in emails from athletes, that sugar is only anaerobic. Wrong. Sugar can be very much aerobic, okay? Fat can really only be aerobically metabolized, so keep that in mind. But the increased storage of muscle glycogen is a significant adaptation of lower intensity efforts, which really primes the body and is really one of the main reasons to prime the body to handle higher intensity efforts. If you neglect lower intensity and simply go right to high intensity, you will have a tougher time sustaining those high intensity efforts because you simply don't have the fuel to do so. All right. Secondary and or additional compensations that occur, you have an interconversion of fast twitch muscle fibers from a type 2B to a type 2X or type 2A. It really depends on which literature you are reading. A fast twitch versus a slow twitch muscle fiber. A slow twitch muscle fiber is like the dark meat on a chicken. It has a very high mitochondrial density. It is a very aerobic muscle. So, typically a small muscle as well. Glutes, for example, are a good example of a glute medius, glute minimus. Soleus, muscles like that are great examples of slow twitch muscles. Muscles which function to either stabilize the body or to perform postural correction, things like that. Fast twitch muscles like your quads, your hamstrings, your gastroc, your calf, or your calf, I should say, your gastroc, your calf, your glute maximus, things like that. Those are fast twitch muscle fibers, which are primarily designed to move joints and move them through space and time and not be functioning all the time. Okay. Among the fast twitch fibers, there is a type 2A or a type 2B. Type 2B fibers are 100% glycolytic or anaerobic fibers, which means they only produce energy through burning glycogen anaerobically, or glucose anaerobically. Type 2A are a more aerobic type of fast twitch fiber, which does have a significant amount of mitochondrial density, so that is something to keep in mind. Other things that happen in and around that low intensity zone, you do get a fairly significant increase in muscle mitochondrial enzymes and mitochondrial density. You do tend to get a increase in muscular capillarization. Now, that's one of those crossover things that tends to move towards the high-intensity training as well. You get a increase in lactate threshold as you move through zone 3 and into zone 4. Remember, we're using lactate threshold as the crossover. So as you approach from low intensity up towards threshold, you get an increase in your lactate threshold or functional threshold power. You get some hypertrophy of slow twitch muscle fibers in that low intensity zone, and you do get some increase in stroke volume or maximal cardiac output in that zone. You begin at the upper ends of low intensity efforts to increase VO2 max and threshold as such. As you hit the threshold level and start to cross over from high low intensity training to high intensity training, you will start to see a more increase in plasma volume. You will start to see a hypertrophy of slow twitch muscle fibers, which really, if I remember correctly, peaks around zone 5, around your VO2 max type level. VO2 max is maximal oxygen uptake, so it would make sense that when you challenge maximal oxygen uptake, you would start to challenge the the size and mitochondrial density of slow twitch muscle fibers, those aerobic muscle fibers. You will also continue to build muscle capillarization as you move from low to high. You will see a significant increase in stroke volume and maximal cardiac output, as I just mentioned, as you go from lower to higher. And, of course, if you spend a lot of time training in the VO2 max zone, you will be noting increases in VO2 max. Big surprise there. The biggest things to take in mind or to keep in your head is that a lot of these parameters, a lot of these things that you're looking to adapt by doing low to mid intensity training do not, absolutely do not change much in that VO2 max, that zone 5, 6, 7. Zone 5 is sort of an anomaly. There is a lot of change there, but it's very easy to overdo zone 5 work. So let's keep that in mind as we go through this. What do you lose by doing a lot of high-intensity work? Or I should say, what do you gain by doing a zone 6, zone 7 type workout? Well, you get a lot of muscle high-energy phosphate, ATP creatine phosphate stores. That pathway tends to build significantly higher. If you are a sprinter, this is a good thing. If you are looking to ride a road race, maybe not so much. Not if this is the only thing you're doing. In certain blocks, yes, this will work very nicely. However, let's keep that as another podcast. Zone 6 will typically give you an increase in your anaerobic capacity or lactate tolerance, which is not a bad thing. However, it's not a good thing either if that's all you're doing. And Zone 7 will give you that fast twitch muscle hypertrophy and increase in neuromuscular power, which is that 5 to 10 second sprint power. All right. Bear in mind that in zone 6 and zone 7, you are getting almost no aerobic benefit to your training. Let me repeat that. In zone 6 and zone 7, you are getting almost no aerobic benefit to your training physiologically. Okay? If you cannot train your aerobic system, there's very little point in training your anaerobic system because you're not going to be there at the end of the race or the end of the fondo to sprint across the line. All right, so that's a really good illustration as to how you can get in trouble with high-intensity type workouts. All right, but before we get into how we're getting in trouble with the high-intensity trap, it's time to talk about how the body builds and recovers. You've sat through all the physiology, so let's apply it. I'll do that right after a quick break. All right, now we've gone through all the physiology of high intensity and low intensity training. How do we apply it? How does the body build and recover from this process we call training? Well, the body basically builds itself through a supercompensation process only if you exceed your limits while training. A good way of looking at it is this. Whether you believe evolution or not, follow with me here. From an evolutionary standpoint, we try to survive under all circumstances. If we are being chased by something and we get away, okay, our body is going to say, wow, we have to do that to survive. I'm going to build myself stronger so that I can do that and survive again, because maybe that lion or tiger or cougar or bear or whatever won't give up as quickly next time. All right, I may have to run longer to get away from that creature, otherwise I can't survive. So your body will adapt itself to that increased demand that you put upon it. Now, on the same principle, if you don't use it, you lose it. Your body is constantly in a state of entropy. It wants to maintain as little tissue as possible so that it can function properly. All right. Muscle tissue takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of fuel, and it takes a lot of nutrients, minerals, et cetera, to keep it functioning properly and happily. Now, in ye olden days, I sound really dated by saying it that way, but in ye olden days, we didn't always have the ability to walk to the fridge and get food. We usually had to chase down our food. All right. The body did not want to maintain any muscle tissue that it didn't have to. All right. That's an evolutionary adaptation. So it explains why if you don't train or you don't use what you have, you don't tend to have it anymore. Think the guys who go into the gym and they weight lift, 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 lift. They look awesome. You know, they got big bulging back pecs and biceps. And then they basically stop lifting. What happens? They turn sort of into a shell of themselves, and those nicely defined muscles tend to shrink. They get significantly smaller. Well, that's the principle behind your body building and basically chewing up tissue that it doesn't need, okay? that's basically a super compensation theory, all right? I.e., I don't want to hurt, I don't want to hurt if I have to do this again, so I'll get stronger so that I don't hurt, all right? Generally, that supercompensation pattern takes several days, depending on the intensity and the duration that you choose or apply to your body. The main problem is rest is really the key to rebuilding your body after a hard workout. For supercompensation to actually occur, you have to rest. Okay. Many times you've heard that you don't get stronger by training, you get stronger by resting. And that is really so true. It's hard to even comment how true that is, because really that is the key to getting better and becoming more fit. All right. You cannot supercompensate if you do not rest, okay? And the reason why is it's a very biochemical process. Things like insulin-like growth factor, human growth hormone, things like that are all mediators of recovery, all right? But they only function during a resting state. They do not function while you are working out. That's why overdoing your workouts, both in intensity and time, overdoing that intensity or that frequency or that duration and underachieving in the resting phase will lead to burnout, overtraining, burnout, overreaching, etc., etc. Basically, if you have insufficient rest or excessive external or training-related stresses on the body, your body cannot rebuild to a full and healthy state. All right, it just cannot cope with the amount of stimulus that you put upon it. All right, and this is a big problem with many of you who are the so-called working man. Many of you who are the cyclist who has a job, who has a family, who has to, you know, make sure you get up at 5 a.m. to take the dog out. You're getting up at 6 o'clock to go to work, and you're getting home at 6 o'clock at night, things like that. All right. There's a lot of external stress on your body in addition to your training-related stress. So moderating your training stress and your training intensity is really, really important in order to achieve optimal recovery. All right. And a note to keep in mind for our next podcast, which will be the intensity trap part two, cortisol is sort of the big bully in blocking your training. Many of you have heard of cortisol and say, yeah, cortisol is what's make you fat, right? Well, it also blocks a whole lot of biochemical markers which help you recover. So if you are consistently stressed, both by training or life, or psychological stress is a good one, and your cortisol levels are up, you're going to have a hell of a time seeing gains on the bike. All right, so really keep that in mind, okay? If you continue to prolong the amount of stress on the body, which is very easy to do, by the way, in a high-intensity interval training situation, typically plateau or decline will be the result. And this is sort of illustrating why we take a rest week after we do a really heavy training block and why we don't continually train at a really high level. The concept of periodization is really, you know, built on that groundwork that you need to progressively overload a system, allow it to adapt, and allow it to recover periodically so that you can progressively overload it again without really burning it out or forcing it to plateau or decline. Okay, so what really influences our recovery, our supercompensation? Obviously, nutrition is a huge, huge mediator of how well we can recover and how much work we can do. Improper nutrition, not enough calories going in, not too many calories going in, can be very detrimental as well. Composition obviously makes a big difference. Are you eating enough protein to repair muscle damage, for example? Okay, stress, like I said, psychological stress, physical stress, physiological stress. Do you drink 14 cups of coffee a day? I've seen people in an office environment who walk around with a 14-ounce mug of coffee, and every time, it's like a Master Chief in the Navy, they have a hook for a finger because it's just got a coffee cup hanging right off of it all day long. I used to be that way. I no longer am. I do enjoy, very much enjoy my gourmet coffee. Coffeebeandirect.com for a great plug. Those guys are wonderful. Check them out. But that's a good example of physiological chemical stress. Sleep status, those of you who are sleeping extremely poorly, you are not going to recover nearly as well as the guy next to you who is sleeping soundly every night. And of course, illness this time of year, everybody's coughing, everybody's sneezing, everybody has some kind of stuffy nose, sore throat, whatever. Illness will really put a damper on your ability to recover and supercompensate and build your body. That's why many, many times people will actually take a break from training if they do get sick, just to give their body time to recover. All right. So with all of that applied information behind us, we need to figure out how and why we get in trouble with the concept of high intensity and where the high intensity trap comes from. a great quote that I ran across while I was preparing my podcast notes for this episode came from Wenger et al. From the Journal of Sports Medicine, and he says that the pattern of improvement where different intensities are compared with different durations suggest that when exercise exceeds 35 minutes, a lower intensity of training results in the same effect as those achieved at higher intensities for shorter durations. Frequency of as low as 2 times per week can result in improvements in less fit subjects, but when aerobic power exceeds 50 milliliters per kilogram per minute, so VO2 max of 50, and this is just an aside, a VO2 max of 50 is the equivalent of sort of an untrained college freshman, all right? I think Greg LeMond, maybe? Eddie Merckx might have had one of the higher ones, but I believe Greg LeMond's was measured at 93 milliliter per kilogram per minute. It's simply a marker of how much fitness you really have. All right. But anyway, when aerobic power exceeds 50 ml per kg per minute, exercise frequency of at least 3 times a week is required. As the levels of initial fitness improve, the change in aerobic power decreases regardless of the intensity, frequency, or duration of exercise. Although these pooled data suggest that maximal gains in aerobic power are elicited with intensities between 90 and 100% of VO2 max, so we're talking threshold to VO2 max level, folks. 4 times per week with exercise durations of 35 to 45 minutes, it's important to note that lower intensities still produce effective changes and reduce the risk of injury in non-athletic groups. Wow. All right, what's the take home from that? All right. In my exercise physiology dork off stage, I would have gotten very, very excited by reading this. Breaking it down to you guys, the more intensity you use, the less duration and the less frequency you have to use, okay? If you want to take it literally, for someone who is a recreational cyclist, you only really, really need to train about 45 minutes worth of work 3 to 4 times per week, right? And that's only if we do no other work other than high intensity, hard intervals with minimal recovery in between. All right. The human nature of cycling and training is that if a little bit is good, more must be better. Most people will overdo the high intensity concept. I've been saying it for the whole podcast, and I will continue to say it throughout the end of this one and into part two. People will tend to overdo the high intensity concept, thinking that more is better. That is that is so wrong that it's almost laughable. Okay. I actually had somebody relatively recently, actually, email me and ask me if they could take the zone 2 and zone 3 workout days out of one of my modular plans, I believe it was the base plan if I remember correctly, and replace it with high intensity trainer workouts or some other variety of high intensity training. That perfectly illustrates what the common man cyclist, you know, Joe Sixpack, says. Well, Jesus, if I can get such great, great benefits out of this high intensity stuff, why am I not doing it every time I go out? I had to explain to him through email that, you know, doing too much high intensity work is extremely difficult for your body to process. It's extremely difficult to recover from. Remember, the recovery from an hour and a half of high intensity riding. Think of how you feel, for those of you who are racers, think of how you feel after a race. Think of how much harder it is to recover from a race than it is to recover from a 4-hour training ride. All right. If you really are training properly, you will very easily be able to recover from that training ride. You will have a tough time recovering from that race. Why? You will put so much more stress onto your body from a training stress score standpoint, from a physiological standpoint, what have you, than you will from a training ride. If you break down that 4-hour training ride, I would wager you probably only have about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes of real high intensity work, interspersed with a lot of low intensity work. Now, bear in mind that yes, it is still work, but there is a concept of active recovery, and many times a training ride has active recovery built into it so that you can go and do more high intensity work in the same outing. All right. This is the patent problem with the high intensity trap. Okay, we feel fast while we're doing these hard intervals. In reality, we may actually be going slower, but we do feel fast, okay? And let me clarify that last statement of why we may be going slower. We may be chewing up our body's reserves to the point where we cannot perform as well as we should. I'm sure you have heard of, most of you have heard of the concept of, if you get to the last couple intervals and you're not able to perform up to par, pull the plug on them and go home. All right. If you can't finish the workout, don't bother to half-ass it and finish it poorly. Make your training count. All right. That's what I mean in terms of reality. We may be going slower. And this is where your power metrics, your heart rate metrics, your speed metrics, all that stuff comes into play, is you're able to determine how well you're doing, how fast you're going, how well you're hitting your targets, okay? The other problem with the high-intensity concept and the high-intensity trap is we really should have more time to recover in a high-intensity world, or if we're doing a high-intensity training plan. The problem is we really rarely take advantage of that increased amount of recovery time. All right. We usually have more because we have decreased the amount of time, physical time, that we are actually out on the bike training. Unfortunately, we tend to fill that time that we saved with other things, with weight workouts, with playing with the kids, playing with the dog, going and doing work around the house, doing a brake job on a car, something like that. Okay. We rarely take advantage of the legs up, put your compression gear on so that you can actually recover, kind of recovery. And keep in mind too, high intensity workouts require a lot more energy, which we don't, really often have to burn. If you're highly stressed, you are going to do very poorly in those high intensity workouts, and you're going to basically end up digging an endless hole, okay? The main take home as to how you get in trouble is that many people will say, I'm working less. I can do more of it, or I can do more other things, whether you're talking about cycling or you're talking about outside of cycling. And that's really where you get in a lot of trouble, is trying to do too much while adding too much high intensity volume to your training plans. All right, that's going to be pretty much it for part one. I'm running over 40 some odd minutes here, so I really don't want to take it too much further. I've got plenty more information, and the next one is going to be almost exclusively practical information as to how you can avoid getting stuck in that high intensity trap and how you can actually dig yourself out of it if you find yourself stuck in that high intensity trap. So, folks, thank you for listening to the podcast. I want you to go over to iTunes, rate the Tailwind Coaching Podcast a 5-star so that I can reach a few more people. Remember, you can find me, CoachRobDC@gmail.com, or on the website at tailwind-coaching.com, the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or on Twitter, or any other number of places. So, as always, I want you to be safe, be happy, ride strong, get fit, be well, keep the rubber side down, keep the shiny side up, keep your training intensity in check for this base period, and we will be talking to you real soon about how to dig yourself out of that intensity trap should you find yourself stuck in it.